As far as the no fly list.
If you're on that list.
The most problematic thing is that
anyone can be under the investigation of the FBI.
And I know that something really good is going to come out of all of this.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another week of the No Fly List, where we talk to comedians, artists, musicians, and other cool and interesting people of color. I'm Athir.
I'm Amama. And this week, we had comedian and writer Cody Wilkins on our show.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Cody is awesome. He writes for The Tonight Show. He's written for The Rundown on BET. He does stand-up. He's just all around, like,
overall,
a fun, cool
really
dude
cool
to talk
dude.
To.
Yeah. Also, I really love this episode because we just talk about, like, letting go and not being so focused on, like, expectations
results
and results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, like, when you just let go of that attachment to something and you just put something out there, you do what you can and then let go of the outcome, that really helps you find what you're looking for, oddly enough.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes when you're, like, holding on too tight to something, you're just too close to it and it sort of repels you from it. But I like his approach on just trying to enjoy life and also removing himself from, you know, what he does and who he is. Like, I think as comedians, we can struggle, or artists, or a lot of people, just like defining yourself by what you do rather by other things. So it was really interesting, cool hearing him talk about that.
And he also, like, you know, like, want to be a professional soccer player. Like,
oh my God, he went to Yale and played soccer.
Which is like really dope. So I think coming from, like, just different, like, goals and things that you've, like, always wanted to do really makes you more of, like, a well-rounded person. So, I don't know. It was he's a really warm person. And this was just, like, a really good episode to learn more about your own process.
Yeah.
And we also talked about how men should pay for everything. I don't think we really let Cody speak.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're like, Cody, you should always pay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had an interesting little topic there and had a good dating question that we somewhat let him answer, but
not really, no.
But yeah, Cody is awesome. Definitely check out and listen to his episode. But before we get to that, we're going to get to our first segment.
The No Fly List, where we put someone on our No Fly List, like our shit list, instead of innocent brown people. And this week, we have Joe Manchin, who's a senator. And you know what? I'm just going to add Kristen Sinema on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All these fucking horrible people. They're doing a lot of fucked up things, but the most recent is we no longer have, like, paid family leave.
That's
which
so
is
fucked up.
I think it's, like, down to
4 weeks or something.
4 weeks, which is, like,
if you get it at all or something. If you,
yeah. It's so crazy because men should never again and again dictate laws for women. But also, Kristen Sinema is a bitch. And I think that, like, she, like, also plays into this. So just whoever has been, like, the creator of this development, like, it's so insane that there's no paid family leave in a super capitalistic nation where we're just, like, driving everyone to, like, work to death. And then we're like, yeah, pop out some babies so you could buy more stuff. I could keep going. Yeah. When I get, like, really into anti-capitalist stuff.
And yeah. And, like,
except if I get an audition for a commercial, then I'm like, I will sell this fucking product if you pay me.
Everything also just with the, even like the whole, Medicare just losing, like, subsidized, like, childcare and
it's also like Biden and the Democrats are just, like, dropping the plan from, like, the next. It's like we this current administration is just really fucked up.
I really expected, I don't know why I expected more, but in some ways, yeah, they're sort of going down this, like, Republican line of thinking. And instead of giving us more advantage and opportunities, they're taking stuff away. It's fucked up. And Yeah, none of you deserve to fly.
No.
Hitchhiking only, or the bus, a Greyhound.
Yeah, no, you're not allowed to. If you are in any of those public transportation things, I feel like people should be allowed to harass you.
that is
if you're taking away, as someone who does not want any children, I still very strongly believe that anyone who does deserves a lot of fucking time off. That is
absolutely. Yeah. That is so fucked up. That's
I deserve time off for my period.
Yeah.
I have really bad cramps.
It's like almost family leave. Yes. Is what, yeah. This could have been something.
But yeah, fuck all of those people. But definitely listen to this episode. It's so fun and so warm and enlightening.
Yeah. Enjoy Cody. Welcome, Cody.
Hey.
What's up?
Hanging. Happy to be here.
Is this the first time we've met? Or you look very familiar. I'm sure I've seen you.
You know, every time we've met, my hair has been different.
Ah.
So.
Me too. I just got bangs.
I know that we've never like really had a full blown. We've never really had a full blown conversation, but I know we've rubbed shoulders in a comedy bar before. You know, like
Yeah.
Or like been on a lineup or something. But yeah, this is nice.
Well, good to see you. Now we're gonna get intimately close, all of us.
Sweet. I think I met you really recently.
Yeah, like within the last month.
Just at Peaches. Just because now I lived there for like the last like month and
same.
Then, yeah, it's
such a fun hang. Yeah.
So fun. And we went to the Peaches Halloween party. It was pouring outside.
Oh, no.
You left before. Everyone took about 5 to 6 shots.
Oh, my goodness.
And then that's when, like, things just started to go downhill. I saw people doing things, and I was like, oh, my God. People making out when they were dancing. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I had to get out of there before the party part started.
Yeah, this makes you seem like a really fun person.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I had to leave before everyone was having fun.
Yeah, I was there to watch some comedy, and then I was like, I'm going to go sit back down, you know? That's.
Are you not a big partier? I'm not a huge drinker, kind of?
Nah, I used to really get into that, but then in college, I got 5 concussions playing soccer.
What?
Yeah.
Playing soccer?
Yeah, and then.
How do you get a concussion of soccer?
Just like being overly aggressive, run-ins with the goalkeeper and this and that and the other.
Oh,
and then,
but do you hit the ball with your...
Yeah. And I was just like, I would have like these collisions with people and then my brain would be all screwed up and I'd be like, oh no, doc, I'm fine, put me back in, over and over and over for years in a row. And then it was just like the consequences of like drinking now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. It's like, I feel like a 65-year-old after like 2 drinks. I don't even get drunk anymore. I'm like sober.
Same.
And then sleepy. You know,
ooh. I get sleepy or sick. I had a party on Saturday night. I was like, oh, I'm going to get drunk. I'm going to have fun. And then at some point it just hit me like, if I drink more, I'm just going to get sick. So I just stopped.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work.
Well, I took the 2 months of, I just stopped drinking in September and then I kept that going in October, but I'd only drink Friday night. Cause that would be like, that was like, I'll go to Peaches and then I'll do like another show and then I'll drink Friday nights. And then now I've just kept it going. So now it's like no more weekday drinking, which also friends are bartenders. So every time I go to their bar, they're like, do you want seltzer? I'm like, yeah.
I think it's hard also if you get like free drinks to say
I was just
no.
Gonna say,
that's so hard. Mm-hmm. Even me, I'm like, all right. Like when I've been to Peaches, they're like, here's a shot. And I don't normally do shots, but I'm like, all right, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a shot now.
Yeah. I like anytime I have a set and I get a drink ticket, I'm going to use that drink ticket.
I know. Because like, you feel about? Like this is my only form of payment is damage to my liver. And I will take it.
Right. But if I got to step out, if I'm at the show, I'm at Peaches and it's raining and I got to step out the show, down the block to the bodega to grab like a can of Limerita or whatever, I'm not going to do it. I'll probably just chill, laugh, and then.
I didn't take you for a Limerita. Yeah.
Well, that's just like, I'm thinking.
He's like, do you guys like Smirnoff Ice?
I know.
Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Since I was like 18.
See, well, here's the other thing. During the pandemic, I found out I have the white people's disease. My doctor told me that I have
racism?
Yeah. Which one? Yeah.
I was like, yeah, hold on. He's like, actually, I hate black people. It's crazy. Yeah.
Now, I found out I have a gluten intolerance.
I was going to be my second. Okay.
That's
which is just like.
Wait, I'm so sorry.
Like, I'm in my.
You have celiac or just
intolerant? No, just like an intolerant. Like, I was at the crib for like 3 months last summer. And all of a sudden, my stomach started doing backflips. And you know what I'm saying? Bodily functions was going crazy. And I was like, what is up? And they were like, yeah, I know you're in your late 20s, but. You don't do gluten anymore.
No. So, okay, so like beer is out or like so you got to do ciders. And
I'm not going to die. Like I'm not going to send a plate back at the restaurant unless I want to make the server really uncomfortable because they've been uncomfortable before. But you know what I'm saying? I'll have like a slice of pizza. But if I drink a six pack of beer, I'm gonna shit through my nose. You
know I mean? Have so many bad. Questions because I was like, this sounds like all the.
It sounds like a great diet, too.
Yeah, it does. Like, but like, I have been lactose intolerant, but I also, it's like when I eat pizza, I can't really, like, I don't know what's because I can't drink beer anymore. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was just because I was just like drinking like whiskey or tequila. And I was like, maybe just beer doesn't really work.
Yeah, it doesn't
but work. I can't drink beer at all. Wine is great. I've just turned into like an old lady where I'm like, wine. If right. I do drink, I'm like, oh, a glass of red wine, please. Yeah.
Your finest house red.
Oh, the $6 bottle.
Chuck, Trader Joe's.
That's the problem with trying to get liquor. At, like, you can't. Buy enjoyable alcohol from a bodega if you have a gluten intolerance. It's literally just Lime-A-Ritas and like
an IPA
and like nothing else.
You can have liquors, right? Like vodka.
Yeah, but potato. At the bodega.
Oh yeah.
Like you're not gonna find it.
Yeah.
The little shooters. Yeah,
Lime-A-Rita.
I did start to smoke a lot of weed when I like took the month off, the first month off.
It's a better habit.
Yeah, and then I took a lot of edibles too because I was just like, oh, like I didn't know like summertime me was like partying, and now I've just been like. A glass of red wine. but yeah, that sucks though. That white people disease does suck. I feel like for brown people, all of our stuff is like rice.
Bread.
Like if you are brown, you have a gluten allergy, your parents would be like, no, you don't.
Yeah,
no.
My parents did the same thing. Thanksgiving, my mom was like, I don't give shit.
Like, yeah, I don't believe you.
You're just going to face it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's how, like, even when I come home sometimes and I'm like, I don't really want to, like, eat too much meat right now. And my mom's like, okay, well, I make lamb and chicken, so you could have the chicken.
Right.
Like, you could have vegetarian chicken, basically. That's cool. And are you from New York?
I'm from Chicago originally.
Oh, when did you move here?
About 4 years ago. I came out in 2017.
For comedy?
Yeah, to write for a show called The Rundown with Robin Thede.
BT. Cool.
And that was cool because it was like this miraculously diverse staff of, like, I think we had 6 writers to start, 5 of whom were black, 3 of whom were women. There was some LGBT representation in the room. Like, all the host was a black woman, all the EPs were women.
That's
dope. You know what I mean? It was just like, yo, this is mad different. Like,
yeah.
And it was on BET, so it was just like,
yeah,
this is nothing like the late night that I ever thought I would have experienced. And the writer's room was full of hitters. Yeah. Z-Way was in there.
Oh.
Alex English, Janelle James, Jordan Temple, Lauren Ashley Smith, who's over with the Black Lady Sketch Show right now. Like,
hell yeah.
It was like, we were a gang in there. So that was cool. And then, but it lasted one season.
Yeah, and I also feel like... Afterwards, BET was like, when she got the Black Lady Sketch Show, they were like,
The Rundown. Y'all remember? It was like,
And it was like, you guys didn't really like actually give it a chance.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
And did you start in Chicago for stand-up or more when you moved here?
Well, I started stand-up when I was in college. So I was a freshman. I was at Yale, which was like, I went there for the least Ivy League decision you could ever go. I wanted to be a professional soccer player growing up. And I got recruited to like a handful of schools in Yale, which is like not very good athletically, or wasn't at the time.
I was going to say, none of the Ivies.
Like, they're like, good team. Yeah. That wasn't like what they were known for. But the coach was this black guy from England, and he was like, you'll play a bunch your freshman year. And I was like, all right, well, that's better than going to like some high-powered sports school and riding the bench till I'm a senior or whatever. Right. So I went. And when I got there, I was, like, mad disappointed because their idea of diversity was, like, this white girl's from Vermont and this white girl's from Connecticut, you know? And I had to learn who Joan Didion was. I don't know. I was smart, but I didn't nerd out like that. So I didn't really get along with a bunch of the kids. I wasn't drinking or smoking because I was trying to play soccer, which means I wasn't going to parties.
Right.
I wasn't, like, hooking up with girls and blah, blah, blah. It was just, like, a dry-ass first semester of college. And then one day... I got an email that was like, you could try out for the last comic standing competition on campus. And I was like, oh, I should do something other. Like, I should step outside my box. It was a funny guy in the locker room, you know? And I went. I took to it pretty naturally. It was a lot of fun. I won the competition. And then I'm from the south side of Chicago, which is like a very different world than New Haven, Connecticut, and like
I've
Yale
seen Shameless.
And all that.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it.
Right. That's it. That's spot on. I think I'm in the background of one of those.
Yeah. So, are you?
No, not at all. But
do you do extra work or just there? Yeah.
Right.
Just your house.
Just the crib, you know. But then I went back. So I did stand up at school. And then I went back home for the summers in Chicago. And on the south side, there's a club called Jokes and Notes. which at the time the house MC was Hannibal Buress, and like,
holy shit.
Or was Lil Rel Howery, you know, and wow. Hannibal Buress was kind of in and out. Deion Cole had kind of just taken off. It was like a lot of older, more seasoned and like kind of popular, predominantly like black comics.
Yeah.
And it was actually, it's good, but it's also mad segregated kind of. Like it was all the black comics were at Jokes and Notes. This wasn't like Second City and Zanies and Laugh Factory type shit. It was just like, frankly, niggas in there. And like, so I just got my comedy start with my one foot doing like 18 to 22 year old highly educated white kids, where all I had to do was like change my voice and shake my shoulders to get a laugh because there's no other black people around. And then I would go back to the summers and like run months upon months in like a room full of black working class 35 and up, like adults and shit, you know, with like no, still don't have facial hair, but you know, I was just like a clean cut little boy. And so that's where I got started, like those 4 years in school. And then after that, went to LA for about a year and some change. Went to Nashville for half a year.
What did you do in Nashville?
I was trying to escape comedy, honestly.
Yeah?
I got my ass kicked in LA. I was just like...
Well, LA is also...
Yeah.
Not comedy.
Yeah. It's not real comedy, yeah.
Did you yell and scream?
Sorry, LA.
Like, that's like the LA, like,
we're always
comedy.
Shitting on LA comedy.
It's also...
It's different.
It's also, I think the vibes in LA, also very segregated, like...
Right.
It is really different. People are really, as we were talking about with Alex, like, I think, like, really superficial. And it's just, like, when I was in LA, I was like, I don't think I could ever live here. Like, if I obviously got, like, a writing job, I would move out. But I don't think I would necessarily, like, be too happy. Whereas I've, like, I love New York. Like, when I went to school and taught in, like, Rhode Island for a bit. And that was really hard to be in.
Right.
Because it was just me as, like, their, like, diversity. Like, yeah. So I think, I don't know. LA sucks.
LA was just, it was so inaccessible, you know? Like, you had to, I'm new to the city. I'm 23 years old, fresh off, like, a batch of concussions. I still can't see straight. Now I'm, like, trying to drive left and right to do 17 different open mics in a row, you know? And then on top of that, I've always been the type of person who I like to keep what I do kind of separate from who I am from an identity standpoint. And that's impossible in Los Angeles. Like, you have to...
You are what you do.
You are what you do.
What your credit, and, whatever. Yeah.
Well, how do you do that? And do you feel like... Because New York is so, like, go, go, go and hustle and grind. Like, what are the ways that you would do that here?
I think the best part about New York, especially in comparison to LA, is that nobody gives a shit about who I am or what I do. Like, literally no one cares. I write for The Tonight Show. My neighbor doesn't give a fuck, and neither does my friend's friend at the party who, like, works as a chef or, like, anybody that I'm sitting at. Like, nobody cares. Like, I'm still sitting in the DMs of many, many show producers sitting on red because it's like, I don't give a fuck what you do, man. Yeah. I don't know you. I'm not about to just put you up because, you know?
New York is real in, like, that way.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not just going to...
Which,
you know,
is, like, also really fun because there are, like, there's, like, newer TikTok comics that I was at a show, and there was, like, no one at the show, but it was, like, fine. I was, like, whatever, like, good way to, like, work on, like, some new stuff.
Right.
And the guy, this, like, really young-looking boy was, like, yeah, you know, my manager, like, said blah, blah, blah. And he's, like, you know, like, getting that, like, and his friend was, like, well, he has, like, 1 million on TikTok. And I was, like, I just, like, now I don't like you and I don't get to know you.
Yeah.
And that is, like, the only, like,
it's
thing
so
that I, like, got
kids
out of
these
it.
These pandemic comics.
I was, like, these children just, don't, like, know any respect
they also don't,
for their elders.
Yeah.
It's been wild. Yeah, coming back and seeing so many new people.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something freeing about being anonymous in New York. It's also...
it's amazing.
It's also like when you stop giving a fuck about a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the best place in your life where, like, I have a lot of non-comedy friends that are so important to me because, no, like, we all have our own different lives. And, like, it's so nice to have that. And no one's like, yeah, what did you, like... How many things did you, like, it's just, like, an actual, like, really wonderful friendship.
Yeah.
And that's, like, even for comedy friendships, like, that's how I approach them. I'm, like, just, do you want to, like, come over and hang out and watch TV? Like, it's, like, I would rather just, like, do that than, like, meet you at an open mic at 11 o'clock. It's exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, So like the long, long, long answer to where did I start? Even coming back to New York, like I got here four years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
But he's like,
I'm really smart.
But not anymore in my head. Oh my God. But even in New York, I've been here 4 years. But like that first year, I was writing on a show. Didn't really get up that much. And then the next year, I was like, where the fuck is my next job at? I'm supposed to have another job.
Yeah.
So I like sat in the house and tried to write my way into another job. And then the next year, I like finally started kind of getting out doing stand-up. But I was living with my non-comedy friends, like far as hell from comedy. It was like this really nice human life that I had kind of helped me back in terms of like diving into doing
that's so important to have that separation because too many people, I think, do define themselves by what they do. And I think we learned through the pandemic when that was stripped away. It's like, well, who are you now outside of comedy?
Right.
And a lot of people, and I think it was like tough for a lot of people because it's like an identity crisis of like, wait, like if I'm not posting how many shows I'm doing tonight,
What am I posting?
Yeah.
So what am I doing?
My favorite thing to do is look up writers for scripts that I've loved. And it's always someone who has like barely any social media presence.
Yeah, that's
and
the
I
best.
Fucking yeah, love that's it. True. Yeah. Because I'm just like, I'm like, oh, yay. Like, this makes me feel better as I'm like, just like, and I'll like go outside and like write in places that my friends are at. Then I'll just like have my headphones in and it'll be like, I'm like out. But it makes me feel better because I'm like, they don't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're not, like, 100+ thousands of people. And, like,
it's low. Like,
they're just writing. They're doing what they love. And,
it's the best way to exist. Like, I had the, I think, the benefit of going through my, like, comedy writer person identity crisis in, like, 2018, 2019, you know, like, pre-pandemic. In fact, about a year ago, I quit. I was like, at the top of 2020, I was like, you know what? I've been unemployed. I have a Yale degree. I have a credit. I've done some good shows. Everybody's like, hire black, hire brown, blah, blah, blah. And for like almost 3 years, I couldn't get a job. I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm sad. I'm sick. My stomach hurts. My hair's falling out. This is bullshit. So at the top of 2020, I was like, if I don't have a job by October, which would have been 10 years since I started doing stand-up, then I'm like, not really going to pursue this anymore. I'm just going to chill. And October came around, and I didn't, despite like doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
And like the day before I was going to stop, my agent... My friend, I guess for legal reasons, my friend who was an agent was like, you should do a couple page packet for Fallon. And I was like, fuck that. I'm not trying to do no more work. Like, I'm done. But I just wrote this packet that was like, they would never say this shit. This is funny to me. I don't really care. Like, I'm not doing any more dancing or like shucking and jiving on paper, blah, 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 blah. And then 4 months later, they called like the house is on fire. And I was like, well, I guess I got to do this again.
Holy shit. That's
and now, awesome.
How do you like it? Like working for...
I'm really grateful for the opportunity, but my experience I think is extremely different from folks who come before me because it's all been remote, you know? Like I'm not even getting on Zooms. I just wake up every day
and
get assignments via email and via GChat and just like write jokes that I probably would never say myself, you know, from 7 a.m. to about 4 p.m., right? And then you take a couple deep breaths for maybe, you know, eat food, if you work out, if you do life for a couple hours, and then start working on the next day. So it's all, or like go out and do stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
Which I'm having a lot more fun doing now because it's like the product part of life is covered, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm paying.
You're just having fun with
I'm having fun doing stand-up. That's art. What I do all day is like being on a, what do they call like the factory lines, you know?
Assembly line?
It's like being on an assembly line. It's like I sit there and
it's
I jam
like formulaic.
Yeah, just jam the button 100 times until maybe it lights up once and it's like, great, my joke got on. Awesome.
Yeah.
And in the evening it's like I get to go up and use my own brain.
Say whatever
and like
you
say
want.
What I wanna say and don't worry about all that. So.
It is I think that's like the goal too. It's just like to just do whatever you want. And like I don't know, I think the best what you're saying, like when you were like, I just wanna quit, if you look at like a lot of people's stories. They always say like, "Yeah, the moment I wanted to quit,
the universe is like, no,
you gotta,
because you let go completely
right.
of everything that you thought you like have ever really wanted. Like the times in my life that I thought at one point I thought I really, really wanted to like go like to grad school and like I wanted this one program." And I was like so bent on it. And then like when I just stopped giving a fuck and I got in, and then I was like, oh. Okay, but I also, like, midway through was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And, like, so it's, like, there's so many things that I remind myself, like, because, like, I'm just like, I know I really want this in the moment, but the second if I'm like, if it's meant for me, fine. But like, you do really do it.
Yeah.
I texted Lily recently and I was like, anyway, like, you know, I let go of this job and like, you know, maybe I'll get it. And she was like, you did not let go. You're just texting me that you let go. And I was like, yeah, I thought that would work.
Right, but right. You can trust the universe into thinking you
I was
let
like,
go.
You know, may Allah bless me with this opportunity. But she was like, no, like you have to really just fully let go. And that's the way to do it.
Yeah. I was doing a lot of, not a lot of. But I was reading this book over the pandemic called Sapiens, mm-hmm. and it's just like a pretty objective look back at the history of like human beings, you know, like from when there were six different versions of humans down to like last week, you know. And there was this like a snippet of like a Buddhist ideal or something, and it's the only part I really remember. It just said, desire is the root of all misery, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like if you burn your hand, is going to hurt. But if you burn your hand and you want it to stop hurting, you're going to be miserable that it's not hurting and your hand is going to hurt.
What you resist persists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
So kind of you just got to.
So I was just like, you know what? I don't even want a job anymore. Fuck it. I don't have a job. I don't want a job.
I want to be unemployed. Okay. Like,
here's the bad advice soundbite is quit your way to the top, you know?
Yeah. Reverse psychology, the life. Just right. Be like, yeah, I don't want this.
I think, yeah.
I don't want to be successful.
You're like, yeah. Or it's not even like, I just like, yeah. There's so many things right now that I have a list of that I'm like, just want to let go of. It's not even like comedy or like anything else. It's just like, I just want to let go of so many of these things just because I just want to be happier, especially when the sun starts to go down at like 3 p.m.
Yeah.
now. That like my priority right now is just like my happiness. And like, and I think that's why I like doing shows at night where you just say and do whatever. The show that I didn't see your set. It was like the really rainy day.
Yeah. A couple, like last week.
Yeah.
Keep it casual comedy.
Yeah. But like I had gone up and I like, just wanted to try a lot of like dumb new stuff and I just didn't care. And it was like one of those where I was like, oh, I should record that.
So
I was like,
I am
the
bad.
First time that like everything like hit, but so it was just because I was having fun. And I think that's the key to life.
Yeah, if you're not having fun, what the hell are you doing? Like, what's the point of life?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I've had a couple like TV comedy jobs as like an assistant. That's my second now as a writer. And it's like, you gotta understand, you're not curing cancer, and it is gonna be like there's gonna be minutia and bullshit in like the work of making comedy. Like you make comedy for people, a lot of the magic of it is in consumption. But if you're just like making art, if you're doing stand up, whether you're like polishing it to be the next big professional or just like for your own soul, you gotta be having fun.
Yeah,
you gotta.
So many people
gotta entertain yourself.
So many comedians are so miserable.
Well, that's because like so many comedians will get the stuff that they thought they wanted. Imagine if I was like, and then for this next segment, we're gonna go around and say the comic that you hate the most.
Names.
But it's also because like so many people. Like, you think that you want that thing, and then they get it, but then they're like, I want more. And it's like, you gotta chill, though. You have to, like, learn from this. Also, I'm gonna say, like, most writers' room, I imagine, are a lot of people who have gone to, like, Ivies or, like, things like that. And, like, the competition, like, I think you kind of have almost, like, a leg up because those schools are so intense and people are, like, really intense about the way that they work. And, like, I don't know what Yale...
It was like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's tough to say from like being in the privileged position, you know, but I think a lot of those entities and institutions are only as hard as you make them. Like you could go like math is math wherever you do math at. It's just going to be how hard are you going to work on those problem sets and like how long are you going to study to evolve. Science is science. Communications is communication.
Yeah.
It's just there's a lot of internal heightening of the stakes when you find yourself at that level. Like, I know a lot of friends of mine, straight white dudes and such, who like, I don't have a lot of straight white dude friends, but guys I went to college, you know, a lot of folks who I know who have never been told that they can't do it. And some of them, they have like this absence of imposter syndrome and believe like, yes, absolutely, I can do it. And others, it's like, well, I've never been told I can't do it. So that means that I should do it. And if I'm not doing it, well, what the fuck am I doing wrong? And so a lot of that angst comes from, it's like internally, right? And you become your own worst enemy. And like you're really dragging yourself down. In reality, everybody's looking at you like, dude, you wrote for the Harvard Lampoon and now you, and then you went to Letterman and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You're doing it, but they're just like spiraling inside. And I'm certainly guilty of that to a degree.
I was like, but like great at that.
Right now.
You know.
I was when I did coding, and my group at Brown was these two white dudes, Will and Noah. Hey guys, they were really sweet.
They're listening, yeah.
But they are consultants. But they, I remember once they're like, "This is like so easy, bro. Like we got this." And I remember just being like, "I am bringing the team down. I don't know how to code properly," and I was just like having like a moment, and it was just like one little like mark in the code that was just wrong, which is why it kept coming out wrong. But it was like one of those things where like I spiraled hard for like hours, and then afterwards I like had a conversation with myself where I was like, mama, you can't do that. Right. Like, yeah, it was just, but I think when you're in those environments, it's easy. And comedy too, like I've had moments where I'm like, I don't deserve to be here. And like what, and it's like a thing, but then you have to be like, wait, but I am here. So like that's all that really matters.
And also I think there's not a lot of people giving out, there's not a lot of gatekeepers giving out favors, you know?
No.
Like, especially not a lot of white gatekeepers giving out favors. I think there's a couple of them trying to pat themselves on the back or like feel good about giving a person of color.
You're a diversity hire. Yeah, like a little, like,
but
not even. They'll be like, wow, I recommended you for a show at Union Hall. Yeah, you should kiss my feet.
But like, you know, motherfucking ABC is not handing out six-figure writing salaries for free, like because they like, because you're, they believe you can do it. You know what I mean? That's the validation in it right there. It's like, all right, like you're not on that ABC, NBC stand-up showcase because they just thought it was like, all right, like you got game. You know what I mean? Like, I think I've kind of tried to divorce myself from the idea of what I deserve or don't deserve in the comedy space.
Like, life is not subjective. A meritocracy. And like the sooner you find that out, and it's like, it's not fair. Yeah, it's like,
and
it's
also,
not,
I was going to say, like, nothing.
Not,
you're
nothing.
Yeah,
life
nothing
is based truly on merit. So, yeah.
A lot of nepotism.
Yeah. So letting go of that, I think, is really, really smart.
Well, we have our first segment that has nothing to do with this.
Hell yeah. Let's segmentize.
It's called 50 Shades of Brown, and it's where you answer a dating question from one of our listeners. Are you ready?
Ready? We're going to ruin some lives.
Let's do it.
Wait, I always ask everyone their sign.
I am an Aquarius.
Hell yeah, me too.
I'm a Capricorn.
Nice.
What's, what, do you know your sun and your moon?
I don't.
Okay, neither did Alex.
We should start looking at it. None of the guys know. I just know.
I know the women are like, and then my moon. And
when I first got to New York, people asked me what's my sign, and on some asshole shit, I'd be like, you know, slow children to play. I don't know, or like, stop, you know. But I just
yield right.
Right. It's almost, you do. Somebody's got a great joke about this. I don't know who it is, but it's like you got to know all of those things now. It's like, it's almost like, what religion are you? You know, how tall are you?
I wrote a sketch about men learning about like their charts and getting like conned by a guy, like trying to teach them their charts. I'm really excited to like actually shoot it. But it was after a conversation I had with one of my friends, and he was like, I don't know, like, this girl said something about, like, me being a Gemini. And I was like, well, that's not, like, why you cheated on her. I was like, that's just a bad person. So if you give them the wrong advice, we're never going to put this episode out.
We will send them your number and they
can
talk to you directly.
Send them straight to me.
So there's a guy that I'm dating who's been asking to borrow money. I've been dating this guy for about a month.
He's already shaking his head.
And we've had four amazing dates. Oh, that's so little. He's super busy with work, so we don't get to text much.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. And today he asked to borrow $25. Does this mean he doesn't take me seriously? I've never asked to borrow money before from anyone. I find this behavior a bit strange.
$25?
$25?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, there's some disconnects in here.
Yeah.
He's super busy with work, but he needs some money from
you? Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. There
this
you
is,
go.
That's like, how I feel. What? That's so weird.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit alarm number like, one what, going
what
on.
You can't use that as an excuse and borrow money. Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Work's been so busy. I've been working nonstop. Can I have rent money?
Also, if I think about who I would ask for money, there's at least, you know, 10 people that, half of them have my last name. But there's like, you know, 10 people I'd ask money before I ask like someone I've been on a date with four times over the last month. Also, what are y'all doing on these dates? Four times in the last month, that's every weekend you're going out.
Right.
Yeah.
And he needs just $25? What, is he buying drugs to smoke with his other girlfriend? I don't understand. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't know. Like, what does that mean? What was the final question?
Is he taking me seriously? No, obviously not.
No.
He's using you.
I mean, I can't tell you how he feels, but it doesn't sound like a serious situation. He's about to seriously take your money. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I have other questions, like, is he paying on these dates?
Yeah.
Are you paying? Does he need the 25 to take you out?
Right. And why 25? Why not 20? Like, I can almost understand a bigger amount. Like, oh man, like whatever. I need $1,000 because this happened versus 25. It's like, you can't ask anybody else for that.
And also I would be concerned, like, are you close to your family? Because like family is there for each other. And like, if you ever need something, you go to your family first.
Yeah, I think. If you want to borrow $25 from somebody you're dating, you just don't go out that weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm going to just not spend these $25 on the two coffees we were going to get.
Or put it on your credit card.
Whatever the fuck.
I don't know.
I don't know. There's a
lot. This is suspect.
This is. Also, the other thing is like, maybe you should date people that are better. Because like, what does amazing mean? Like, is amazing like, wow.
Amazing dates? Is that what she said?
Yeah. Like, because like, did he just like make you come real hard? And now you're like, oh my God, that was great. And if he did,
maybe worth the $25. Yeah. Honestly.
Well, also like, maybe it's because like he needs a place to stay on the weekends or something. Guys who.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's like a lot of stuff here that is makes me feel like you need to just find someone a lot better. And that's so possible.
Or borrow $25 from someone else to loan the $25.
Oh, it's like a chain.
Just to see what happens. Okay. It's like an experimental loan.
He pays it back.
6 degrees of $25.
Right.
And just everyone is connected with that, yeah.
Is he just borrowing from every? Is he dating multiple women, asking that them would each be for $25?
So funny. That would I actually really respect that. But also that means no one's paying. I mean, they're paying. Here's the thing. I don't know. Like I haven't gone on a date in a bit, but I just assume that like mostly dudes should pay. Is that? That's still a thing.
I think that's kind of still a thing.
I'm
kind of like, I started dating someone and at first, like, so I used to do this thing where I don't let the guy pay. Like, I'll just be so insistent.
Fear, no.
I know. And then one of my guy friends was like, no, just let them pay on the first date.
Well, you should always offer.
I always offer, but then I become like, I don't know.
Are you fighting? Like, brown people fight with their credit cards?
I shouldn't. But I don't do that with Arab men because they take it as an offense if I pay. Like, they won't let me pay.
Is he Arab?
No. But his parents are immigrants, so they're like it's like similar kind of. Yeah. So the first day I was like, okay, I'll just let him pay. I still offered, but I wasn't like forcefully like, yeah.
Right.
And then now I'll like always offer, and then sometimes split stuff. But it's sort of, it depends on what it is. Like if it's a coffee or if it's something like whatever, like a big, like I'm not gonna be like, you know. But
a thing that people,
it's hard for, I don't know.
I think a thing that I've noticed was like, I think 2 months ago I went on like some dates and the guys would just show up at the bar a little bit later. Like it would be like, oh, 5:30 and I get to places on time. And they're like, oh, I'm running 5 minutes late. And I was like, well, I'm going to get a drink. And like, but then they would be like, oh, you want your second drink on me? But I didn't want to drink too much because I actually wanted to see what they were like without me being like buzzed and see if I actually
good, so good
then,
idea
yeah but then I think after that I was like, well, this fucking sucks. I've paid for my own drinks and that was not the point. But I think maybe I should just start to get there 20 minutes late and just be like, I don't know. But that's like the thing that I feel like guys should pay.
Katie Boyle, we brought her. She always she always tells the guys they should pay because she was like, yeah, we make less money. Like, we have to go through all the shit. We have to pay for stuff for our period. We are the ones that get HPV. We have to we've spent so much money on shit that even though guys can get it, but pass it on, and we're the ones that have to deal with the shit. I'm like, you're right. You're right. We've each shelled out $1,500 for colonoscopies.
I like that we're not
going to.
I like that we're not going to let you talk about this, actually. you have no opinion.
I just feel like, but what you're saying makes sense. It's like you've already invested so much money in surviving to the point of getting to this date.
Right.
Help me represent. The thing, what I experienced pre-pandemic, I'm seeing someone now, but pre-pandemic, it was, one, I didn't really have a job, so I couldn't really be dating that much. But it was nice after, like, my mentality was, all right, I asked for your time. I'm now paying for your time.
Oh.
For the first, at second, probably, by the third time, but probably, I was so broke. It was like, you just trying to hang out. We're trying to do something. But it got cool because it would be like, all of a sudden, the economy of friendship gets put into the situation. We're like, all right, I've now paid for whatever the date was, the drinks, the movie, whatever. And then a young woman be like, well, you want me to call Lyft back to my crib? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's, whew. All right, you just saved me, at the time, probably was like $15.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. And it's,
I was
like,
going to say like $30.
Yeah. It's pre-pandemic Lyft. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? This, like, piling into an Uber pool with 17 different strangers going around the whole of Manhattan
we'll
get back. Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is a way, even if someone's borrowing money from you, this is way too soon.
Yeah.
So find somebody else.
I don't know. I'm all about just, get dudes to pay for everything.
I mean, I
made a guy
thing.
Pay for my Lyft back to my place. He ruined it. He kept talking. So I thought I was going to have sex with him. And then when we got back to my place, I was like, thank you so much for the Uber.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. He was really obnoxious. I talked about this yesterday on Tim and Micah's podcast. And Micah was like, because he was being mean to me. And he was like, you like hustle, like you like that culture. And I was like, you were fine until we got into this car. What's going on?
Oh, boy. And that's fair to
ditch. But but I say start to learn how to get other people to spend money for you.
Yeah, I think if I were a woman, I would definitely try and finesse everything for free.
Yeah, it's so fun.
I'm a weirdo. I take it as like this pride. Like, I think it's after my last relationship, my ex, I wouldn't prove that I'm like wildly independent, and I'm like, I don't fucking need you, so I don't need you emotionally, financially. So I kind of like almost like overcompensate by being like, I'll just do it. But then I have trouble like letting people help me, and now I'm just trying like, all right, it's fine.
No, you gotta do
let
it.
Him give you your jacket if you're cold. Right. Like, I had to consciously be like,
I do. That's a thing that I do where I'm like I'm cold because it's my mistake, and
right.
I will
like, you shouldn't have to suffer. Also, I don't want to be that. Yeah. But I think it just sometimes makes guys feel better to do stuff like that. And I like now let this guy put together all my furniture because I just moved. So normally it's like, I'm doing it myself. Yeah. But I totally fucked up. Like
No. That I used to get the guys from Two Saints to do it. Yeah. I would just be like the bar.
The bar.
I love
it's a mama's bar.
It is
basically.
My bar. I do make drinks. If you ever, oh my God, I do make drinks for people there sometimes.
Shout out Two Saints. Yeah,
I was like,
great place.
I tell people that I like, whatever. But yeah, I like would just get the guys who were like just really flirty. I'd be like, can someone help me? And then they would just install stuff and I would just watch TV and it was great.
I need to be better about, I don't know, not be better about taking advantage of men, but like I need to not let
but I'm friends with them.
Yeah. I think it's just, anyway, but I think we answered that question. Yeah. Lady, move on. You can find somebody who has $25.
You should find someone else. And actually right now is the perfect time to do that.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You can find someone unemployment money or something. Okay, Cody, we have one last segment for you.
Okay, let's do it.
Called Keeping Up with the Caucasian. So this is a segment where we talk about things that white people do and whether we as people of color also do these things. So we've got different categories that I'm going to throw at you and just pick one, and I will ask you a question from that category.
All right.
This is very scientific, so we'll see how white you are.
My name is Cody.
Yeah, and you're allergic to
soccer.
Gluten.
I'm allergic to
actually on here. Yeah. Gluten-free is on here, but I'm not going to do that one. Okay, so we got food/beverage, pop culture, activities, style and clothes, phrases or sayings, and miscellaneous.
Let's make fun of white pop culture because it's kind of oxymoronic, right?
Yeah, the last person also chose.
That's I'll take miscellaneous.
I mean, you can't. It's fine. Yeah. They're not. It doesn't.
I mean, I want to mix it up for the listeners. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it takes.
Your episodes will come out weeks apart.
Fantastic. We finna pop culture that shit then.
Do you listen to NPR?
Nah, I've listened to one episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Me too. Yeah. That's about it.
Because I was like, maybe this will help me write jokes for the Tonight Show because it's like very middle, like very American sensationalism, you know? But no, I don't listen to NPR.
I don't either. Like the news, no. Like I don't just like have it. I remember my old roommate would always just like have it on 24/7. I think the voice is just like, I don't know. I just find it kind of annoying. Like I'll read my news or something.
Yeah.
But like it is very geared towards like white liberal, like the way everything is phrased. I'm like,
Yeah. And also I feel like a lot of these like white liberal news things are like also kind of slowly becoming like moderately Republican. In a way, like even like there's things on NPR and like news stories I've seen where I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? Where it's like, why paying back your student loans and not general striking is a good, like all these things where I'm just like, yeah. So I think it is really geared towards people who feel comfortable in their lives and don't have to stress out too much
about. It's like news light. It's like,
yeah. It is news light. And it is like something where like I would much rather not. And you, like, I'm pretty sure your parents, like, if you go home, there's just like
a news. Watch like Al Jazeera.
Yep. Yeah. Or BBC exactly. Or the Pakistani. Yeah. Like we watch like the Pakistani news, and I'm like, oh my god, the world is on fucking fire.
Dude,
like,
and it's like it's, very. Yeah. Yeah. We have like my parents have like the satellite, or they did. I don't know what they have now, but they get like the Arab channels, and they are not censored. Like you will see like massacred bodies, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
it's so crazy. But that's like what, like when I was younger, I'd watch that all the time. I'd be like, oh, this is.
Yeah. Watch someone get beheaded, and you're like, all right, cool. But like, you're not gonna. See that or hear that on NPR.
Maybe.
I kind of fell back from like pursuing the news at large because one, I just felt like a lot of people I imagine like pretty powerless. Like, what am I? Local news, national news, it's all fucking bad and there's nothing I can do about it. Why am I going to go out of my way to go? And also, you know, on between Twitter and Instagram, my family group chat. The bad news will find me. Yeah. People are going to tell me what's wrong.
Like, the WhatsApp group chat.
Bad news travels badly.
Right,
it's going to
get to me.
That's true.
Yeah, I also, Twitter is like my news source.
Oh, man.
Which sucks because I am on it so much.
I had to chill from, there was a good window of time where I just like, didn't get rid of my Twitter or Instagram. I just got the app, both the apps off my phone.
Oh, I tried that.
Yo, my screen time dropped down to like an hour and 15 minutes a day.
Wow.
What?
It was wild. I was bored out of my fucking mind. I was reading a lot of books and like taking a lot of naps. But yo, I was like, my
Cody just took
naps.
Like, it was like 18 hour a day that he was sleeping. And he was like, it's crazy. My screen time is just down to zero.
Well, all these depression naps that you just take if I just stay asleep. No,
he's like, if you guys just sleep all day and then just wake up to eat a meal, that's all you need to do.
It was like, you ever, what's the best way to describe this? It was like I would come back onto the apps after half a week, 10 days, or whatever, everything would just be new and refreshed. The news cycle would have turned around. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not getting inundated with the same death. It's different death.
Different,
you know,
yeah.
It's like different destruction.
Yeah.
It was great.
But also, like, the start of the pandemic was this, like, constant, like, cycle of, like, one bad thing after the other to a point where I think,
terrifying.
Like, even, like, psychologically, like, people were like, oh, your brain, like, is not supposed to handle like this much.
Yeah.
So I think people like start to shut down. I had to like force myself, I think in April and May, to like stop going on Twitter. That was the only time where like maybe my screen time like dropped, but I also was just like watching TV and like I was trying to do everything possible that wasn't like being inundated by constant things. 'Cause that was bad. It was like almost every single day, like one week of news in like March 2020 was like years worth. And
that was not a good time for
anyone.
But yeah, I feel like, I mean, and I've only listened to NPR news like a handful of times, but it just like puts me to sleep, and it's stuff like I just don't care about, you know.
Yeah, NPR makes me feel like I'm in the like in sixth grade in the back of my friend's parents' car on the way to school, just like, man, put the fucking radio on. You know, like, what is AM radio? You know, why are we doing this?
Yeah, that is, yep.
It's torturous. My homie, his parents, it was so funny. They were like both Jamaican immigrants, but like Chinese Jamaican. And so they were like, his dad was like really fair skinned. His mom is Chinese Jamaican. We're both thick Jamaican accents.
Oh, wow.
And when I was younger, like when we first got to hanging out, I'd be like, what did they say? You know, I'd be like, what are they talking? And then we'd listen to NPR and I'd be like, how did they even, what,
well,
how
yeah,
is this,
I'm getting this
happening? But yeah, NPR.
That was your first intro. My first introduction was like my first white roommate. And I was like, okay, that's what this is.
I think mine was in Providence, probably. That's right. Like, yeah, where all the whites
Nobody listened to it in Alabama. But I didn't grow up around a lot of white people in Alabama either. Yeah. Surprisingly, not surprisingly, but yeah.
I used to see a lot of, my mom is a news reporter in Chicago, like for CBS, Chicago.
It's like you're CBS, like, fuck the news.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of like fuck the news. Because when I grew up as a kid in the morning, the news would be on because she'd be like getting ready to go to work and like catching it before she took off. And I'd just be like, everybody else is watching cartoons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everybody else is watching. There was always a aversion to the news. And then last summer, when I deleted all the shits off my phone, it was like, when all the black people started getting killed, when the news started
reporting a little bit on it.
Reporting, and I was just like, well, and my Twitter feed, especially because like the rundown was on BET, and it was like a very pop culture news comedy like intersection. So I follow a lot of like black journalists and intellectuals, and like a lot of intersectional like activists and things. And so my whole Twitter feed was just like, hey, everything's racist. Do you like to brush your teeth? Racist.
Yeah.
Do you like the ice cream machine? Racist. And it was just like, all right, I know. I'm cool.
It was like, it was just because like white people were discovering racism for the first time. And then they got too much of it. And then they were like, okay, this is too much. Can we take a break? And that
And everybody was like, no, twist the knife. It was like,
right. No,
I think that summer I just stopped. I don't have a lot of white girlfriends at all for a lot of reasons. But I really, I think, just like kind of cut out. I think now it's just down to like two, maybe like close white girlfriends, but even then they're surrounded by black and brown women that I'm just like,
yeah.
But it was last summer where I was like, actually, I don't like you. I don't like you anymore. It was great.
Well, yeah, basically there are other more diverse news sources.
I just stopped talking shit about white women on this. This is so bad.
Oh, no.
I do this so often. And then afterwards I'm like, oh no, my boss is definitely going to be a white woman at like.
This podcast should be, we don't like white women. Except, okay, we don't.
Well, thank you so much. Well, we won't end on. I won't go. We don't like. Thank you. This was so fun because we got to know you.
Yeah,
and now we're
fun.
Hang out.
Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on. I post a lot of shows on my Instagram account at What Cody Said, and I just re-upped on my website, whatcodysaid.com. I'm doing a lot more stand-up than like I've ever done in my life. So like,
yay.
Come see it, motherfucker, you know?
Hell we
got shows. I'm doing 20 minutes on Thursday at Caveat.
Oh, dope. Oh,
that's gonna be fun.
With Jenna Friedman and Hari Kanabalu.
Oh, shit, that's going to be really, really fun. And that venue is so amazing.
It's so fun. That's a great venue.
I didn't even know that was the lineup. I just saw it.
Yep.
Like, literally,
amazing.
I was standing outside.
Well,
I was like, holy
Caveat,
shit.
Caveat, it's like one of the, it's like Union Hall or Bell House.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm stoked. I'm ready.
Yay.
To go.
That's really fun.
Great. Yeah. So, yeah, please follow Cody. Follow us at No Fly List Pod. Follow me at Ether Yacoub.
And you can follow me at Amama Sardar. And thank you so much for Canal Street Radio. For hosting us.
Yeah. Thanks, Cody.
Thank y'all. Peace.